Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It's Thursday, the 13th of June. If your name is Judy Patrick, please return to the studio.
Come back.
Please return to the studio.
There must have been some miscommunication,
but we desperately need Judy Patrick back. She was here, and then I turned around and she was gone.
All I can tell you, Joe, is that she was walking out with Professor Kalen Brown, and I said, neither of you were on the panel this morning, and they both shook their heads vigorously and said no. There must have been quite a mix-up.
Don't leave me here by myself with these guys, Judy. Come on back.
That's a very good point, Frank.
And if you know that for some reason that Judy can't make it, Kalen, you come back. It's fine. But I thought we had communicated with Judy, I know. So anyway, hopefully we'll have a full panel. I know she's listening to the radio now. I'm sure she'll come back. Everything will be fine. And if not, we have a wonderful panel here.
We do.
Who have arrived and have stayed. All right. I thought it was some sort of media project disagreement that you all got into, and she stormed out.
Well, we did.
Okay. Well, maybe that's the reason.
It's always me against the three of them.
No, you don't have to fight with everybody.
Yeah, I do.
No, you don't. It's fine.
Yeah, I do.
Well, then they leave. I can't get them back. All right, let me introduce the panel to you. SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. He is a visiting adjunct professor at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, which will become a recurring theme here in a moment. Terry Gibson, good morning. How are you?
I am great. Thanks so much for having me.
Wonderful to have you with us. Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, is to be with us. We assume she'll be back any moment. She's probably in her car. She's probably hearing this on the radio. She'll turn around, maybe get a bagel first, and come back.
It's like major guilt, Joe.
No, I don't mean to guilt her. I just want to make her know that she's welcome and that we'd love to have her come back, and there's a seat waiting for her.
If she could pick me up a cinnamon raisin bagel, I'd
there you
that.
Go. Yeah.
It wouldn't make that too.
Lightly toasted with a little bit of a smear.
Can I just say, yeah. I am so incredibly offended to hear about raisin bagels. God did not make raisin bagels. Nor did anybody come up with stinking blueberry bagels.
God did not make jalapeno bagels either.
Well, that's all true. It's all true.
Just saying.
Just saying. I like that. Just saying.
Edward Hamilton, Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI and recent electee to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. Fran Berman joins us.
Yay.
Once again. Good morning, Fran. How are you?
I am good. How is everybody out there?
We're well, and it's good to have you here. Thank you very much. And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, every day is a challenge. There's no question about it. To crawl out of bed, our producer, David Gustina, did a very interesting thing this morning, and I very much appreciate him because there's nobody better. But he set me up for my interview with the deputy majority leader in the deputy head guy in the New York State Senate, Mike Gianaris.
Oh, Gianaris.
7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
Now that, you know, I'm here, but 7 o'clock in the morning, that's a little bit on the rough side. But I did it, and he was very good. The last thing he said to me this morning was, I want to be on as much as your friend the governor, because the two of them don't always get along that well, don't you see?
So he'll be calling back at 10?
Yeah. Let's tell him next time it'll be 6 in the morning, then 5 in the morning.
Yes. And if you were talking in the parking lot, Judy Patrick, we'd love to have you come back.
All right, enough already.
Oh, my God.
Come on back. Well, good morning, everybody, and let's get started. It's great to have you with us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Very nice, again, to have you with us. All right. Let's get started on the news of the day. A lot going on, and as Fran Berman always already pointed out to me, there's just a lot of you know, he said, she said, bickering.
Hey, guess who's here?
Ladies and gentlemen, Judy Patrick.
Yay.
Yay.
She's here. No bagels, but she is here. Yeah.
That's what I was supposed to be doing.
Judy, I take full responsibility if it was not made clear that we wanted you here today.
I don't know what happened, but okay. I'm glad to be here. Well, sorry for the confusion.
It's wonderful to have you, and thank you very much. It's great to have you with us.
There was some speculation that you left because you were angry at me for my participation in the media project this
morning. You know, Alan is of the opinion that we're boring and that he adds a certain spice to the show that the real journalists in the room do not.
The boring show.
The boring
it's called The Boring Show.
Well, listen on Sunday. 5:30, 6 o'clock? Yeah, on Monday too. It's a good show this week.
Did you just accuse Alan of not being a real journalist? Is that what just happened?
You know, I was trying to slip that by him. And,
well, thanks for putting a light on that, Terry. All right. Well, as the Democrats deepen probes, President Trump accuses them of being out of control. This is a story that I'm going to read a little bit from the Washington Post that seems to do a good job of harnessing and lassoing all of the dysfunction that happened yesterday in sort of one narrative. I don't think it doesn't have everything, but it has a lot of the ingredients of what happened yesterday. So President Trump lashed out against a widening web of congressional probes that demonstrated the limits of his strategy to declare victory and try to move past the 22-month special counsel investigation into Russian interference that has consumed much of his presidency. Yet, Trump's latest efforts to defend himself ran into new obstacles as a House panel moved to hold two cabinet officials, Attorney General William Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, in contempt of Congress over the administration's efforts to shield documents related to its decision to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. I'm pretty sure if this story happened 8 years ago, it would have dominated the news cycle for weeks. And I actually had to search for a pretty good story that had contempt in the headline. Anyway, the committee vote came after several hours after Trump asserted executive privilege over the material related to the 2020 census. By the end of the day, there was more potential bad news for the White House as Hope Hicks, the president's longtime advisor who left last year, agreed to become the first former aide to testify next week for a House Judiciary Committee probe into whether the president sought to obstruct the Russia investigation. Meanwhile, Trump invited further scrutiny when, in an interview with ABC News, he seemed to suggest that he would accept opposition research on a presidential rival from a foreign government. Oy, it's not an interference. They have information. I'd take it, he said. I think. He said, I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI if I thought there was something wrong. Trump was unable to mask his anger with the congressional investigations during a photo op ahead of a bilateral meeting with the president of Poland in the Oval Office. That is a lot in four paragraphs, but that was yesterday. Who would like to begin? Alan?
Well, I watched with great interest as the president did his usual thing to grab hold of the entire conversation and narrative. You got 45% of the people who are Trumpers or who are sympathetic to Trump, and they will think there's nothing wrong with what he said, that he would take information from our adversaries, serious adversaries, the Russians and the Chinese, and he would use it. And he wasn't going to go to the FBI, even though Al Gore went to the FBI with that information when he had an opportunity to do that. What'd you say?
We see how that turned out.
Well, yes. He said he would do it. Well, this offended a lot of people in this country. And I'm always wondering about all those people who fought for the country, who hear something like that, and many of them are, of course, sympathetic to Trump, and whether it gets them off the dime.
The one thing I did mention in the highlight
reel that I just rattled off here. Also, the Senate Intelligence Committee held their second meeting with Donald Trump Jr., the president's son, over his role in the Trump Tower meeting, you'll remember, with Russian officials amid suspicions by Democrats that he previously lied to Congress. He declared after the three-hour session that he is not at all worried that he would face perjury charges.
Well, what do you think he's going to say?
That was the other thing that that happened yesterday.
Well, you know, the one thing that sort of is in common about all of these various issues are elections, whether it be how the president is refusing to allow information about this census question to be put forth so that everyone can see it. That we know is all about influencing elections so that Republicans have a majority by keeping people from wanting to be interested in filling out the census form. And also, of course, the election issues surrounding just the fact that we now know for sure, absolutely, that Russia tried to interfere in the United States elections and that they are already actively trying to do it again, and probably other countries are too. And that none of this is really being dealt with. No solutions are being actively put forward by anyone, especially the Republican Party and the president. And that's the common theme running throughout all of this. And it's unfortunate that Donald Trump's inability to focus on this or lack of patriotism to even care about this overshadows the fact that our elections in this democracy are in jeopardy in a very big way, and we need to do something about it.
You know, what's concerning to me is that he doesn't seem to know right from wrong. And you would think the president of the United States, he doesn't think it's wrong. And all along I thought, well, at least he knows right from wrong. But listening to that Stephanopoulos interview, I don't think he realizes that it would be wrong to do this. And that underscores, once you understand that, you understand, oh, well, he didn't think there was any collusion because it wouldn't have been wrong to accept that information in the first place.
But, you know, I'm not a therapist, but isn't that part of, you know, that's part of narcissism. You know, I think that's part of a narcissistic personality.
That whatever you do is okay.
Yeah, that you know, you're the only important person, and you get to feed, you know, whatever you think is important at the time, and you can be as random as you like. And, you know, but really it's all about you. And, I mean, the thing that really concerns me is, again, not a therapist, you know, for the mental health of America. You know, we're going through this national soap opera endlessly. And, you know, today's news has certain names on it, and tomorrow's news will have different names up. But it's all the same kind of stuff. And I really worry that there's kind of a continuing, you know, traumatic stress syndrome that we're all dealing with constantly. And, you know, this is, you know, I really worry about the repercussions for this.
Well, let's just remember that Donald Trump, before he became president, was a reality TV star. That was really what he was doing. For the last few years of his career. That's what he was. And that's who we elected. And so it shouldn't surprise us that we now have a situation where we're basically living in a reality TV show every single day. And it's very upsetting. And I agree. I think the mental health of America is really been compromised.
But don't you think there are reality TV hosts who know the game, know what they're doing, but who, when they step outside that studio, have a sense of reality? This guy internalizes, I think that Fran's point, your point, are so well taken. This guy, when he says something, he immediately seems to believe that he's right, even though, you know, it's so clearly crazy.
But it is, I think it does seem to be consistent with his entire life. If you look back over his entire life, this seems to be the way he's always operated. It's the way he was raised. He's always been put in a position where the spotlight was on him. And if it wasn't on him, he was given the tools that were needed to put it on him. And he's always lived above the law. You know, he's never really been punished for anything.
Well, and the other thing that's really scary is that I guess I've sort of thought for a long time, until recently, about the robustness of the American system. You know, we have different houses. You know, we have the executive branch. We have the legislative branch. We have the judicial branch, that they provide checks and balances for each other. One of the things that Congress is supposed to do is investigate things that are not going well. And it seems like with this continuing soap opera of obstruction and pushback and, you know, I'm not going to do it because you asked me for it kind of stuff, it makes me feel like, you know, if you put dysfunctional people in a functional structure and the structure does not you know, is not able to sort of deal with that. Maybe the structure is not as functional as I thought.
But I'm sorry, one last thing. But do you really think it's a matter of dysfunctional as a matter of, I mean, I keep thinking back to Hitler. I do. Because, you know, he just refused to accept the rules of the game. And he made his own, Hitler made his own rules. And that is what Trump is doing right now. He's not buying into any of what you just mentioned.
But I'm not, and I don't want to put words into Fran's mouth, but just because I think I feel the exact way that she does. But isn't this showing that our system doesn't have a check and balance on that, because you can obstruct and get away with it?
Yeah, and I think that you and Alan both have a really important point that I've been thinking about a lot, because there's all this, you know, bad stuff. You listen to the, at least in my opinion, bad stuff. I know some of our listeners don't think it's so bad. And this stuff happens, more and more stuff happens. But it's all in the, we had these protocols and these practices, and this guy is just ignoring them.
Norms.
And it's not, yeah, we had norms, and this guy just decides to ignore them. But in fact, it's hard to make what he's done illegal without more evidence or more this or more that. And so the question is, you know, could the structure be more robust by really having more clarity about what's legal, what's illegal, and what's practice, good practice, and what's just bad practice, and what we're going to do about bad practice.
You know, that's such a good point, because what's going to happen is when the smoke clears and when we find out more about this guy, and it's all laid down, I think you're right. I think that's what happens. It's what happened post-Watergate. That's where we had a special prosecutor. And then when the heat got off, they took away the special prosecutor. And that's why we have this problem with Mueller, who reports to the Justice Department as opposed to being independent. But yes, Fran, I think you're right. I think what will happen is people will never forget this part of our history, and there will be compensations.
What's stymieing the effort right now, though, is the assertion of the executive privilege. And so how real is executive privilege, and how established in law is it? I mean, how often can it be invoked? Can it be invoked for everything?
Apparently.
It's being tested in a very big way. And I think it's really important to also remember that it's not just Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell, the Republican Party, especially the Republican Senate, do have the power and authority to put those checks and balances in action, and they've really refused to do so. And so they really are enabling him to act this way and get away with as much as he's gotten away with. And I think it's important to realize that it's a team effort.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, is you have these what I think of as bad actors doing things that are not illegal. So what are you going to do about that? And I just think, you know, we're kind of lost.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will return to our panel. We have many other things to discuss. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll return right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Fran Berman is here, Judy Patrick, Terry Gibson, and Alan Shartok. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll get to the letters in a second. Now I lost Alan.
I'm
losing panelists left and right, but that's all right. Does anyone? There he is.
Hi,
Alan. We need you to read letters.
Oh, good.
No,
I
raisin
did not
bagel.
Steal them like I did the last time I was here. Oh. You leave, you lose the opportunity to read the letters.
Well, I have to say that Judy Patrick is by far the best letter reader I have ever met in my entire life. She's phenomenal. So I share them. I tend to share them.
Oh, no, that's fine. You can read.
Okay, so Melinda says, appalling. But as long as there is no consequences to Trump or his kids, they will keep behaving as they always have. No one should be surprised at Trump's response to taking foreign info. Well, it's interesting. What is he really doing or saying there? Think about that for a second. He knows he's in trouble for having taken it. He denies that he knew about that meeting in Trump Tower. The kid has obviously testified, and maybe, some people would maintain, might have even perjured himself and said it. So he sees the train coming down the track. He knows there's going to be an exposure and a potential exposure. So he says, and by the way, even if I did know about it, or even if somebody did it, there's nothing wrong with it. He's setting up, he's obviously setting himself up for the moment that that happens. Yes?
I think so. Seems to be a pattern.
Yeah, Rudy Giuliani said the same thing. Said that there would be nothing really wrong with accepting that information.
Sure.
It's just opposition.
Well, if Rudy said so, it must be right.
Mike says, Trump is winning. Good morning. Trump is winning because every day he's the lead story on your program and every TV news program. What about the protests in Hong Kong, the attack on oil tankers in the Gulf, the rise of right-wing leaders in the EU? This is what he wants to be the capital of his story. And if we continue to do that, he will win in 2020. Well,
Boulderdash.
In defense, I listened to Roundtable yesterday. You were talking about Hong Kong. That was your initial story.
Of course. We do it all the time. Our news
I agree. I don't necessarily agree with Mike about Roundtable, but I agree with Mike in general. There is a whole world of news happening right now. And, you know, we're just all obsessed with the soap opera. And
but it's
Mike's
also the President of the United States. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you get around that. It's the President of the United States of America. And how do you not report on that?
And when he acts out the way that he's acting out, how can you not say this aberration? You yourself said it, Fran, in this office. It's so crazy that you have to say things are out of control if you're the news media.
I mean, look, last night, the President of the United States of America sat in the Oval Office behind his desk and told an American journalist that he would have no problem.
Well, George Stephanopoulos, but go ahead.
Well, I'm not going to.
That's a big thumbs up to you, Joe Donahue.
Let's hear more about
that. Well,
he's
definitely American, right?
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, he told an American citizen that he would have no problem accepting opposition research from a foreign country and that calling the FBI was not really that important. I mean, that you can't ignore that.
But do you have to have like 937 stories on it? Well, you know, wouldn't two be enough?
But Fran, we're on the way to fascism if you accept that. And that's the problem.
The thing that we all talked about during the campaign was that if the problem was going to be that we normalize the behavior, and to me, if you don't report it and you don't say, oh, this happened, then it becomes normalized. I think that's the balance.
I'm not
isn't
advocating
it?
Not reporting it. I'm just advocating having a whole newspaper full of
understood.
Other stuff.
No, I have
as
and if you
your newspaper is full of other stuff.
And if
it
that
is.
Letter if that letter is condemning the cable news channels for their coverage, then I completely agree.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, I don't completely agree. I don't like to disagree with anybody here, but I do think...
Oh, man,
I think
that's the name of your game.
I think this guy is so dangerous, is so pathetically dangerous that you can't ignore it. You know, a lot of people said that about Hitler. Sorry to go back to that, but he's a joke. We'll be rid of this clown. We'll do this and that. And as everything that's antithetical to democracy or to the way in which this country goes, and Fran, you were so right about ignoring the norms and everything, he's not going to let people go before the Congress of the United States, guaranteed, obviously, in our Constitution. He's just gonna make it up.
Okay,
it's
but
very
try
dangerous.
The social experiment, right? The social experiment is his narcissism, again, not a therapist, feeds on attention. And, you know, he's a master at that. I mean, that's the thing he's best at, you know, getting on Twitter every day, getting in the news every day, all of that stuff. But imagine that the rest of us showed some self-control and just had some of what, he does and sort of thought about the rest of the world in a more integrated, holistic fashion.
I would maintain...
How would that change his behavior?
I'll tell you, first of all, you couldn't do it. Second of all, I would maintain that if, in fact, you ignore him, he wins. He wins because he's saying, no, my people don't go before the Congress of the United States. I'm saying executive privilege. My kids are entitled to get away with anything that they can. Look, this is I believe, I've been hearing contrary opinions, but I believe this is the most dangerous time that this country's ever had, ever. Because this could be the end of our Constitution. It could be the end of our Republican democracy. I always put Republican in, because as soon as I say democracy, somebody writes me a letter and says Republic. So that's why I
say I don't think I think some of what he does is being ignored somewhat. I mean, he had, in some of his tweet storms, he says he tweets really stupid things, like last weekend so something about Bette Midler, and that didn't get wide coverage. I mean, it's usually when it deals with policy. At one point, there was a discussion whether or not when he tweets, he is actually establishing policy, whether that, and the courts have ruled, it does establish policy when he tweets something. So, especially under the official POTUS tweet.
Well, it's sort of weird, you know, as I mentioned yesterday, he called, it was in the paper, he called Nadler when Nadler fainted and they brought him to the hospital. He called Nadler. And now what does that indicate? That, you know, this is professional side. I can say anything I want. I can do anything I want. I can destroy democracy. I can do all that. But in the end, it's like the hockey guys who walk off after beating each other over the heads and walk off the field and say it's okay.
I would like to think that, but he still was so awful when John McCain passed.
And terrible.
There's other things there. Yeah. I think he must have some friendship with Nadler that...
No, on the contrary, Joe. They have hated each other for 1,000 years, and I know
Or something that I don't know. I just wonder, like, if you're going to be awful, you're going to be awful.
I think it's got a purpose, and the purpose is maybe he'll go a little softer on me during.
Oh, maybe that's possible. Yeah.
Well, he's a chronic. You know, the President of the United States is a chronic, well-documented liar. Not only just in what he says, but in his actions. So everything that he does is a lie. Whether it's a phone call to Jerry Nadler or whether it's a statement about anything, it's a lie. So there is no sincerity there. And that's what makes him so dangerous. And that's why I think when he says things like he said last night about his lack of interest in the safety and security of our election system and sharing information with foreign countries, that's very dangerous.
Yeah.
And he is in a position as president to really jeopardize the safety and security of this country for every single American citizen, regardless of their political leaning. And I just think you can't ignore that, or we just give away what little rights we have left.
Yeah. So Chris from, I'm sorry, did you want to?
No.
So Chris from Schoharie says, hello, panel. Would anyone like to bring up how Trump said male babies don't cry and that as grown men, people he, quote, helps cry? It was totally insane. He talks about how Biden is old, but he isn't losing his marbles. Biden reminds me of an old, wise philosopher, and I believe he has changed from when he was senator and even vice president, especially with the death of his son. I'm a political science major and have always seen Trump and all rhetoric is not philosophy, and that is a major problem in American democracy. Thank you. I love you, Alan. And that's from Chris. Excellent taste.
It's great to know that students are listening.
It's great to know that people are political science majors. That's awesome.
Yes.
Joel says, dysfunction? Good morning, panel. Pardon me. The only dysfunction is named Nancy Pelosi. She must impeach Trump. Joel from Blooming Grove. Well, I've been down that road too many times. I'm leaving it alone. My thoughts on the matter are well known.
Mine too.
Check the record. Yes, we have a difference of opinion here.
That's all right.
Do either of you want to weigh in on that?
You know, I haven't seen any national polling on the issue of impeachment, whether or not Americans think...
There is national polling, and they don't want it. And they do not want it as a whole.
I think it gets, you know, it gets complicated, and she's trying to kind of work through the different strategic angles and that. But I'm really impressed with her, you know, in this round. I just think, you know, she's strong, she's firm, she's strategic, she's, you know, corralling her... caucus. It's like, you go, girl. You know, I'm
is this
impressed.
A feminist sort of statement that you're making now?
I think we're all feminists, aren't we?
I am.
So, yeah.
Me too.
Well, I think it's sexist to consider a feminist. Oh. There you go.
Oh, I like
that. I think she's just a strong leader.
I mean, she's a strong leader. I mean, having led a bunch of stuff myself, you know, it's not the X chromosome that does it. It's a
no,
whole personality.
And she's not afraid to take on very difficult adversarial positions from well-meaning people and to say, no, I'm not going to give this up.
Yeah, and this is what leaders do, and I think she's just been a great leader. So I don't know, is that a feminist viewpoint? No, it's kind of a human viewpoint.
To answer your question.
I see.
To answer your question, Judy, as of June 1st, it was a CNN poll that came out on impeachment. 54% oppose it, 41% approve it.
But
I mean, the problem.
Every time Trump does something, I think that those numbers will change too.
Well, right? But also the 51%, the opposite, or the 54, whatever it is, 54% includes a lot of Republicans.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If it's just the question is, are you a Democrat and how do you feel about this? This is where for somebody like Pelosi gets quite dangerous. People have had it up to their eyeballs. They really hate this guy, and especially the Democrats, and it's huge. So if it's a national, that's why primaries are one thing, national elections are another. Biden right now leads in both of those categories by a lot.
But see, I think she's just trying to do the strategic calculus. And I mean, I can't tell you whether it's, you know, correct thinking or not, but she's thinking, you know, if the guy's impeached, that doesn't mean he's out of office. So, you know, what happens then? And is that a good way to spend the time? And if you're trying to win the next election and, you know, think about, God forbid, the public good, which doesn't come anywhere on the top five on the list, and all of that, you know, what is her best play? And
Dawn,
I think she's just trying to figure that out.
Dawn, I agree with you. No, I think the issue for her is getting Trump out of here.
Yeah.
And the way you get Trump out of here, we know right now, look at the polls, are you don't impeach, you investigate the hell out of the guy. If you're going to start an impeachment process, you start it before the election, but not too much before the election. You win the House, and maybe the way that it's all going, and maybe, I said this yesterday, I'm fascinated by Beto O'Rourke, right? He can't be president. He cannot be president. But he came very close in a statewide election in Texas before. Now, let's assume he drops out of the presidential race, which he certainly should, and runs for Senate.
Wait, can we go back? Why can't he be president?
He can't because he's not going to win.
That would make it impossible for him to be president, I guess.
Don't you see?
Experience and...
Don't you see? He's not going to win.
The Senate would be interesting.
But the Senate, he brings another Senate seat over to the Democratic side. And one of the problems that we see is a lot of the people who are running for president could be running for Senate in their states and could be the deciding votes to bring it over.
Well, you know, the elections are a long way away, and who knows how that's all going to work out. I don't have that crystal ball. But, I think so many Americans, because of the reporting that is out there, that daily shows and shines a light on all of the things that this administration is doing that are really concerning to Americans, they're concerned that this person will remain in office at least up and through the end of the next election cycle. And how much more damage can he and the Republican Party possibly do between now and then? That's a long time.
Well, suppose he sends a missile somewhere. That could be a lot of damage.
A lot. And you know, if there is a potential way to try to slow him down, to try to put something in the path of him and the Republican Party to keep them from being able to do as much damage, that needs to be explored. And that's why so many people think that at least starting the impeachment inquiry might do that. It's hard to know. But people are concerned that at the end of the election cycle coming up, let's say he should win, are we going to look back and regret that we didn't do what we maybe could have done? Because nobody really knows what the outcome of anything is going to be.
But you could still do it. In other words, let's say the guy wins. We all knew about Watergate when Nixon was in his first term, but it took to the second term to get rid of him.
We're late for break. Let's do that, and we'll come back. We have much more to discuss, and we'll have more letters, I assume. We welcome yours. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Judy Patrick, and Terry Gibson making up the group. Always lovely to have you all. Let's talk about some other things that are going on in the world. One part of the story that we I do want to get into the census fight because that's really interesting. The census fight grows as the House panel backs contempt and Trump asserts privilege. And this whole thing, of course, comes down to the integrity of the census, right, of what that means for the census itself.
Remembering what the census is supposed to be, we need to know how many people, not voters, how many people in this country are here. That's what we need to know.
And so the critics of this, of the president's action, will say that it's the politicalization of the census, and also the fact that a fairly pristine, it's always had issues, but a fairly pristine process is being sullied by these actions. Also, the other thing to point out, I think, is just how important the census is and how much information under those old, what you were talking about before, under those former norms of how important the census was, although under these new norms, I don't know if it is.
Okay. First of all, let me just say that the census is a count. It's important to know where how many bodies are in the United States, but it's much more important because based on that information, we allocate seats in the House of Representatives based on what we know in the census. So if Texas gets more people and New York gets relatively fewer, then Texas gets another one of our Congress people, or Florida gets another one, or California gets another one. That's what's been happening. Therefore, there is a sense on the part of the Republicans that if we can politicize this, as you just said, Joe, it's going to help. It's going to help us.
But to your point a moment ago, then that is to imply, if I'm hearing you correctly, that as I guess with most things, that it's always been political.
Oh, it's always been political, but this is more political than usual. It really is.
But the census, it's more crass, right? Census solves other problems as well. So sure. If you're thinking nationally and statewide and you want to plan where should you put a road, where should you put a hospital, it's really important to know where the people are, not just where the citizens are, for example. It's really important to know, you know, how you develop infrastructure, electricity, water, et cetera, and the census is really important data for that.
Well, it also helps determine what types of financial resources various parts of the country, various cities, various towns, various counties, how much financial aid they get from the government, from the state. It's all used based on population, information that comes from the census. And if there are hundreds of thousands of people in communities that are not filling out the census form because they're afraid that they're going to be arrested for declaring what their citizenship is, that means that we have inaccurate figures, inaccurate data. And you're a data person. You know better than the rest of us how important the data is.
Well, and in fact, the New York Times said, you know, we're likely to see, if we, you know, go ahead with sort of this kind of crazy question stuff, we're likely to see a 6% drop in a lot of different areas. 6% is a really big deal when you're trying to make these kinds of plans.
You know, let's not kid ourselves. A lot of people are just learning for the first time that the census counts everybody, not just citizens. The Constitution is very clear about we count all the people in the country, but I think there are real discussions going on in bars and diners across the country saying, well, why do we have to count non-citizens? And I think that argument or that education of our electorate has to be made.
Yep.
And for a president that constantly harps on fake news, here he is actually leading the way in creating a fake census. It's really going to generate fake data that is not going to be truly representative of the makeup of this country. And it's going to create all types of misleading calculations that are going to put a lot of communities that deserve more funding in jeopardy and communities that maybe aren't as deserving of it to get more. And it's going to create an imbalance in how we're represented, too, in terms of how many congressional seats there are in every state.
You know, that is so insightful of you. And when you tie it to all those people waiting at the border to come into this country, they all count. If they get over to the other side of the line, they start to count. Are they Republicans? Hell no. You know, these are potential Democratic voters, and he knows it. And so one of the reasons you don't want them coming over, in addition to your jingoism and whatever else you're doing, is because you know that they're going to count for the other team.
Well, it's also still blows me away. Apologies for my naivete, you know, that people will just come out and say, and the reason we want to do this is not it's political, right? We want more guys for our side.
Well, they're not saying that, of course.
Well, they're kind of saying that.
Let's not forget that part of this story is the fact that this has already been argued in front of the Supreme Court.
And by the way, we know where this court is going
to
come down.
The Supreme Court is scheduled to, you know, tell us what they've decided here any day now. But yet, in the meantime, they've come up, the Democrats have come up with evidence, very, very good evidence that shows that what we all knew all along, that this was done for political reasons, that the Republicans realize that if they can get more people to not fill out the census form, then it's going to increase their power.
But let's not forget that Wilbur Ross testified before Congress that they were doing this because they wanted to improve their the Voting Rights Act. And that was not what they were doing. They were doing it for political advantage.
Baloney. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. And this testimony before Congress is an important thing. You're not supposed to lie to Congress.
Well,
in my book.
What is contempt of, so what does this mean? I mean, as I said earlier, it
contempt
just seemed,
meaning he won't be allowed to testify. So you hold him in contempt because this is our job to make him testify. If he won't testify, then we hold him in contempt. We put him in a jail cell below the House of Representatives.
But none of that will really happen.
No, of course not.
And so
we'll go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court's going to say the president has this authority.
It just seems remarkable. I said this at the beginning, that you have something like that happens, and it just seems to be, you know, well, it's another day at the office. I mean, you're holding the Attorney General of the United States
in contempt.
In contempt.
Sure.
Remember, they held Eric Holder in contempt as well back in the day.
Yes.
When he refused to give information over about the guns issue on the border. I would be, like, as a citizen, I would be shamed to be held in contempt of Congress, but it seems to become part of the norm now.
But what also is disturbing about this is that the Attorney General, who now is completely just shown the fact that he is there to be the president's lawyer instead of our lawyer, the people's lawyer, that he's using all this information and power that he has as a way to sort of play these back and forth political games with Congress by saying that if you ask me for additional information, I'm going to ask the president to declare this, you know, being protected under executive order.
And not only that, they have this other false narrative going, which is, okay, you're going to investigate me, I'm going to investigate you. A lead story in the Times today. And I'm going to go back and find out what the CIA was really up to in involving itself in all of this. And they'll keep on talking about it. As I've said so many times, Goebbels 101, just keep on saying it, keep on repeating it, and that'll be the way it goes.
And instead of actually focusing on solving the problem about how to make our election systems more secure, this president and his lawyer, the Attorney General of the United States, seem to be more interested in just finding out who is spying on who's investigating who, and whose fault it is, but yet doing nothing about it, which is very,
well,
very
is it,
dangerous.
Is it that, or is it political retribution? I mean, that's what it seems more like.
Well, it's, I would agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Alan has a fistful of letters. We'll get to those. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, and Fran Berman make up the group. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And we got a lot of letters, so we'll get to those right now and work our way through them.
Will. Bill writes us, bagels. List of items that should never be allowed in bagels and actually removes the bagel's identity. Raisins, chocolate chips, blue or any other berry, cinnamon, and fruit. Allowed are onion, sesame seeds, and egg.
You know, I just want to go on record right now saying I really do love cinnamon raisin bagels. And just to make sure you're clear about this, what I love to do is to smear it with peanut butter and to put honey all over it.
Yeah.
That is my favorite thing in the entire world.
That happens to be disgusting.
But I just want to be on record.
But this letter,
that happens to be disgusting.
But this letter may be from the chief of bagel police, so you may not.
Well, that's what it seems.
Okay.
Very authoritative, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Fran,
well, but
I think you're right.
Well, he's got his tongue in his cheek. Which I love, but I mean, it's
and jalapenos did not come on that list. I just want to point that out.
This people have the same vitriol for what people put in their bagels as they do for what people put on your pizza on their pizza.
Oh, there's.
I mean,
once you
talk about putting pineapple or
anchovies
go nuts.
No.
Anchovies are terrible. Brucey writes, new L.A. Times poll, 22% for Biden, 18% for Warren, 17% for Sanders, and 13% for Harris. Now, I find that very interesting. If you take the 18 and 70, 17 and 17 was 34, something like that. Is that what it is? And one more, 35. If you get Sanders and Warren together, they outdo the 22% for Biden. But that's not the way it works.
I don't know if we know this or not. I have to look it up. I'm not familiar with that poll, but is that national or is that just in California?
That's an interesting question. It says Biden and Sanders' leads are in flux. Just saying, long way to go from Brucey.
Where's Mayor Pete?
Well, that's why I wondered if it was just California, which is why Harris obviously would do so well. But
I think Harris is terrific. I'm a huge Harris supporter.
I think she's those great. Numbers just are higher than they are nationally. That's all.
Amanda says census. The census doesn't just allocate votes and resources. Researchers rely on that data for critical information too. Right. That's exactly right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda. And then
I'm sorry. That poll is for the California primary,
which is a big primary.
Biden, Warren, Sanders, Harris, and then Pete is right below Harris.
Ah, okay.
There you go.
Okay, and then Peter says, running for the Senate. I agree that Beto O'Rourke could beat John Cornyn in Texas, and Julian Castro probably could too. It would be great if one would drop out of the presidential race to do that, and Stacey Abrams too. She isn't an official presidential candidate, and I hope she doesn't become one so she can run for the Senate in Georgia. She's probably going to win. Peter from New Paltz. All right.
That would be cool.
Jill says, hi, panel. The reason for the checks and balances aren't working with Trump is because he's surrounded by people who are letting him get away with everything. Republican Senate isn't doing anything. The AG and his, quote, advisors are his own cronies, and the FBI seems to be hog-tied. He's the fox in the henhouse being guarded by other foxes. Of course, the checks and balances aren't working, says Jill. And then we heard from Sheila, who says, panel, great discussion this morning. Where the heck is Chuck Schumer? Missing in action during critical moments, including when the Mueller report was released, is Mr. Schumer on another taxpayer-paid overseas junket? Well, I am a bit of a Schumer fan, however, Sheila, but I have to say something to you, and that is, there was a very interesting piece in the Times that AOC might want to run in a primary against Schumer the next time.
Huh?
And there would be, a classic, the newers versus the olders. Anyway, thank you for
that. Or if Gillibrand gets
But I think Gillibrand just won, so she doesn't come up for a long time.
That's interesting. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Vote is at 10:10 on Thursday, June 13th. The primary is Schumer versus AOC. Who wins?
In my opinion, Schumer wins.
I think so, too.
I think Schumer's done a lot of favors for a lot of people. But then, on the other hand, AOC beat a standing icon who had done a lot of favors for people in that district.
We're a long way away from that. But I think the AOC would do
very
well.
No, the voting is right now. So,
my
question was at 10:10 on June 13th,
okay,
who wins that primary?
It would be Schumer because she's going to need a little more time to mount a campaign against a long-term incumbent. But I think that over time, I think she would have a fighting chance.
Senate minority leader, right?
I don't know that I agree with you. I think she is an outsider, and Trump was an outsider. And every once in a while, people get a stomachful, and they just want to try something different. And AOC has captured the American imagination, and I mean really done a splendid job of it. People can't get enough of her. When she did that little dance, for example, outside, you remember that? When she did a little dance outside of her office because she had been called out for dancing when she was a bartender, or when she went back to bartending for one day to raise money for people. I mean, I think people love it.
I love her. I think she cares about the public good, and she's still fresh enough that she's not jaded and so much a part of the system that she just ignores that. So in answer to Joe's question, I think Schumer probably wins, but I'm voting for AOC today.
It's a big state. And she is perceived as a New York City person. person, and I think she will not do much of anything upstate.
But if you win New York City, you're in pretty good shape to win the election.
Yeah, but it would be close in New York City. I don't think it's enough to offset the upstate disadvantage she would have.
Interesting. Right. Interesting. Okay, we're going on to Sue's letter. Is it Fran I'm agreeing with? Agree there is way too much coverage of tweets and all else and too little about policymaking. And that's from Sue.
Thank you, Sue.
Yeah.
My today's favorite listener of Fran's is Sue.
That's right. Okay, now I don't think it...
This is, you know, just remember that the problem
not
we have right now is that,
there is
no policymaking going on. Yeah. That's why we're not, you know, talking about or reporting on it, because right. they're not doing any
policymaking. Policy by Twitter, it doesn't really count as policy.
Well, it's not policy.
And okay. policy by a photographer taking a picture of a letter that may or may not have, you know, relevant details in it and then trying to figure out what they are. I mean, are you kidding?
We don't have a policymaker.
I thought that was amazing.
This is a Washington Post photographer who shot a photo of the piece of paper in the president's
the
hand
piece of paper
allegedly containing the secret agreement with Mexico.
And that was an incredible.
That was great.
Incredible. He kept waving it around. And Nixon did the same thing. Remember, Nixon said, I have a plan to end Vietnam. I have a plan.
Yeah, and it's secret from the people that it impacts. What are we, in kindergarten?
And Trump has always said he had a plan for healthcare. Has anybody?
And so
seen?
He held it up to the light so the photographer was able to capture the words.
Right.
And people are saying, you know, Hillary Clinton got in trouble for revealing secret details of things, and here he is waving one around in the breeze. Could have escaped from his hand with a gust of the wind.
Well, the thing that surprised me is you need a thicker paper stock. I don't know. It just seemed like it was a very...
Can't we afford thicker paper in
right.
the U.S.
It
government?
It just seemed like it was very, very thin
like
paper.
Like onion skin.
Like typewriter paper. Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
And Pete writes an excellent letter. Alan is right, of course. The panel. I support his understanding of the similarities to the 1930s. My further concern is that this will trickle down to not only his administration, but what if in a particular state that this type of disregard for the law occurs, Democratic Republic rather than Republican democracy? And Jacob says, Trump Hitler, so sick of hearing Trump compared to Hitler. Not even close. And right after the 75th anniversary of D-Day, Hitler killed millions of people and marched them to concentration camps. Typical leftist dramatization. Also, can't understand if you really felt President Trump was that dangerous, why do liberals want to restrict gun ownership, which would protect the people against a tyrannical government?
Well, there's a lot there, Alan. Where would you like to begin, or do you just
want
to move
just
on?
Said, I want to move on.
Okay.
I think the letter sort of speaks for itself.
But it's but I would say that when you do alienate a portion of the audience who will just turn off that argument, say, no, he's just too far left, I'm not going to even consider the fact that the president may be dangerous. Sometimes if you refer to Hitler too often, I think it degrades your standing among the people you most want to reach. Although maybe you would argue you don't want it, that they're unreachable.
Those who ignore history are condemned, whatever.
Doomed,
right. John, 2020. Dear panel, if Trump loses in 2020, does the incoming administration pursue criminal charges against him? I've been thinking about this a lot, by the way. Curious minds want to know your opinion, John from Great Barrington. The answer, I think, is they let him go. They say, goodbye. They don't put him in jail. Even if they have the goods to put them in jail, you don't put former presidents in jail.
I agree. It seems like you go back to Ford pardoning Nixon.
Sure.
I don't know what
he
else
paid
you
a
do.
Political price.
He certainly did.
Well, just remember we're basing this hypothetical argument on where we are now. We still don't know what else he's going to do between now and the election and after the election. So it's a little early to sort of anticipate what.
Rick says, Trump presidency. The real question for me is how we, quote, fix the Constitution so that one branch of the legislature can't abdicate its responsibility to check the presidency. It seems to me that the writers of the Constitution were naive in believing that some presidential behavior would be so offensive that members of both houses would use the political process of impeachment instead of the criminal justice system. The writers could not foresee the power of political parties and their self-interest in remaining in power. And that's from Rick in North Chatham. I would point out to you, Rick, that the framers of the Constitution never, ever said a president could not be indicted. They did not. This is contemporary hooey, which we have adopted, and I've never liked it, and I've always answered, take it to its most ridiculous, you know, conclusion. President pulls out a gun one day and shoots somebody, can't be indicted. It's ridiculous.
Well, let's also remember that the framers put in place a system that ultimately relied on the people to hold the people that they elect accountable for keeping the system intact. I mean, you know, we the people do elect the people that are there to actually take the action that the Constitution allows them to take. And if we're electing people that are unwilling to do that, which you could pretty easily say right now, if you voted for a Republican, you voted for someone that is absolutely uninterested in taking their constitutional responsibility seriously. And so it's not happening. The checks and balance system is at a standstill because the people that have been elected to enforce it aren't doing it.
But just look at the difference it has made that one house of the legislature went Democratic. For the first time, we're having serious investigations. You all remember Nunez hiding in the bushes at the White House. You know, they were helping the president, calling in the plays. So now you have one house. If you could get that other house, oh, yeah, it would be over.
It would be revolutionary. I mean, it would really be revolutionary.
All right, let me change the subject for a moment. You're getting ready to go to Cancun, and you want to go to Mexico, and you're going on JetBlue. You go to the airport, and you don't have to go through all of the normal stuff.
Happy already.
You go right up to this special terminal, and it's all facial recognition. You don't have a ticket. You don't have anything. It's all facial recognition. But here is the problems. It's unproven, and it's unregulated, and but they're using it. And so here to scare the zippers off us is Fran Berman.
I'm the scary panelist. This is good.
This is scary, isn't
not
it?
Not one of the Spice Girls, but the scary panelist. Yeah, I mean, this is just sort of heads up for the future we're already in. And so the good news is, you know, you go, it's incredibly convenient. You don't need
very
to
fast.
Do anything around your bag or you're, you know, walking through. They already know who you are, right? And this gives you incredible convenience. But
you can still have a gun.
This is really scary stuff. And so kind of play it out. First of all, for them to know who you are, they need to develop a huge database. Now, right now, it's just for international people for whom they already have a huge database of passport photos and visas and stuff like that. But, you know, just extend that a little tiny bit. And they will create, and they can create, a huge database of pictures of everybody in the United States. And that database can be, it's unregulated. It can be used by anyone, government and other people, advertisers, stuff like that, for anyone. The other thing that's super scary about that is, as we've talked about at another roundtable, we're already seeing in China the development of the social credit system, which involves a lot of surveillance and facial recognition, and you get something like a credit score, and that credit score has to do with can you make a reservation for a plane, can your kids get into school, you know, depending, you know, can you get room in a hotel, and all of those things depend on whether you are compliant enough with the Chinese government and you've developed the right kind of score. And it's really hard. It's like they're creating their own version of the caste system.
And it's already making mistakes.
It's, you know, basically a Big Brother social experiment that will be fully operational in China in 2020. So if you look at
which is next year,
if you look at now having a database of every citizen ultimately in the United States, comparing this against things, it's a scary proposition.
Yeah, and what if you have an identical twin brother? which I do.
Yeah.
It knows, but does it know the difference?
It's going to make a lot of mistakes. So, for example, the training set for these AI facial recognition systems are mostly trained on white guys. Not so good with women, not so good with people of color. So you get these very scary mistakes, which can be highly disadvantageous to you.
So two questions. One is that the in my reading of this technology is that one of the reasons that the airlines, Delta, JetBlue, are implementing it is because they can board the planes 9 minutes faster.
Right.
Well, first of all, when has 9 minutes ever meant anything to an airline?
Well, and how much?
I mean, I just like what do you gain in that? And second of all, the other thing I wanted to ask you is that. So the iPhones now have facial recognition.
Right.
Does that information, is that ever linked up in any way to this other facial recognition?
Currently, no. And that's a really great question. So iPhones have facial recognition, but that data stays within your iPhone or, at the worst, you know, with Apple, right? And Apple has a corporate decision that it is not sharing it with other people.
Yet.
That's why I say at this point. But all of this is unregulated, right? There is no regulation that says you have a right to the privacy and appropriate use of your own data. We do not have that in consumer land.
And when you say our own data, it's our face.
It's our face. And in fact, Joe, you know, if you go and you have a grumpy expression one day and you have a happy expression and a hat another day, the technology itself is interesting because they're going to put a grid over your face, and they're going to normalize it so they can make these comparisons. But you'll actually see some errors because of that. Some of these errors can be quite disadvantageous to you.
It just goes to show, too, how completely unprepared the United States is to really enter into and deal with the digital age. Our federal government isn't prepared to do this. We're not doing it. We can't even figure out a way to protect our election system, which is basically all digital now. But to allow private companies to enter into this domain, like airlines, without having any type of real federal oversight, and to expect that our federal government is even capable of doing this, this is why I get really excited when I hear things like AOC running against Chuck Schumer. We need more new people. We need people of this generation in those seats of power that understand how the digital age works.
Well, first of all, you know, I could be, you know, AOC's great 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 grandmother, and you know,
maybe
there's
a
few less greats
but
you know. I care about this. You care about this. All of us around the table, you know, care about this. So, first of all, you don't have to be young to care about this. But, you know, you ought to, like, care about this because you're a citizen and freedom and privacy and all of these things matter. But our government has been, pretty lame on this. They keep pointing the finger to Silicon Valley and say, you guys understand tech. You solve the problem. But that's like asking the fox to develop, the architectural plans for the hen house.
Well, yeah, let's hand over our authority, our constitutional authority.
It's government's job to say, these are the outcomes we want. Yeah. You know, you can be innovative, go to it. That's what America's all about. But that innovation has to be done in such a way that protects people, does not disadvantage people, does not take one group of people and puts them against another people. Yeah,
the federal government is right now outsourcing its responsibility to private companies
and
when it comes
way,
to
Europe
all things digital.
You know, Europe has GDPR. It's not perfect. There's lots of little wrinkles and stuff that ought to be fixed. But, you know, they took the time and the space to protect European citizens. There's no reason we can't do it.
Richard wrote us a letter and said,
"We're really late.
I want my face back."
Sorry.
Yeah, he wants her face back.
All right,
how do you get your face back?
Geeks on the
where
radio.
Am I on timing? Should I go longer now? Have I lost my time? What do you want me to do? Okay. All right. So now we have more time. We have 2.5 minutes.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Go ahead. you can continue the conversation.
No, I'm just saying that this is something we should all be really concerned about. And the lack of appropriate legislation around consumer rights and protections and privacy. Things are starting to come through Congress. We can do this in this country, and we won't get it right the first time, but it's better than nothing. We have to start doing something.
Driverless cars.
So again, two questions for you. One is that isn't this one of these cases that just because we can do it, we don't have to do it? Meaning just because we have facial recognition software that will make us board the plane 9 minutes sooner, but do we need to do that? Because we have to weigh the options. But I also really, and in our time, I'd really like to get to this idea of it's not regulated. So how do we start regulating this stuff in a way that is across the board and makes sense for this technology versus that technology versus another technology, and most importantly, perhaps, emerging technologies?
Yeah, and I think that's a really great question, because the regulation should not be technology dependent, it should be outcome dependent. Yes. So what's the outcome that you want? You want appropriate rights and protections for people. So for example, you know, if I get on the internet and I get on the internet for, you know, Amazon or, you know, one company or another, I would like to know that my data is being used by them to improve their service, but it's not being shared without my permission and it's not being used inappropriately. And I would like to know, you know, how much of that my data they have and how long they keep it and stuff like that. If I go to the airport, you know, right now you can opt out of this plan. What if I can't opt out of this plan? And what if they capture my image and do whatever the heck they want with it? And, you know, is that okay with me? Do I have to stop taking planes? You know, that's pretty extreme. So I think we need to have some, you know, what is your image going to be used for? You know, do you have to give permission to provide reasonable controls over what's done with it? I think all of those things are really important.
So how do they also, because if you have your passport, that's how they get your image in the first place?
Yeah.
Okay.
For the most part, yeah. And then they have, of course, a State Department database. I mean, right now they're looking at, you know, international travel. They have a State Department database they're comparing it with. They have, your passport photos. But if they start doing this for everyone, which, of course, is what they're doing in China, and lots of people have our images, and they put it together in an unregulated database, you know, it's pretty important that we know what's being done with those images and how they're being used. Are they being used to profile me when I drive a car?
30 seconds, Terry.
You know, whatever. Sorry, Terry.
No, sorry. I just want, you know, our country does have a long history of taking things like this seriously and regulating them. We did it with the phone company. We did it with the broadcast television company. We did it with the automobile company. So anytime there's been new technology, our company has historically found ways to regulate it. And this is really no different. It's just that we don't have enough people in elected office that understand it and understand how important and urgent it is that we take it seriously.
But we don't have enough people that understand climate change or the insurance industry or finance. I mean, it's our job to go and get experts and to work with them to do that. I think, you know, to me, that's like not okay.
All right. Fran, thank you very much. Sorry to have to cut you off.
Bye, everybody.
Judy, thank you very much, Judy. Very nice. Hi, Judy. How are
you?
Nice to have you back. Thank you. Terry Gibson, thank you. Alan, thank you. We'll be back and continue after this news from the BBC.